Welcome to another edition of Teaching Restored, where we get to talk about how to teach the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm Kevin Jones.
And I am Julie Hilliard, and I'm super excited about today's topic. Oh, I say that every time. Okay, let me tell you why I'm excited, though, because I have a specific reason that I'm excited. So a little bit ago, probably, I think about 3 weeks ago, Todd and I went to a conference together, and it was interesting because the conference itself was very kind of, you know, it was a dental conference. It was a whole bunch of dentists and oral surgeons and stuff like that. It was a party. But at the end, they had this keynote presenter that talked about happiness. And I thought, oh, this will be fun. If nothing else, it'll be uplifting, blah, blah, blah. And I'm a little bit of a speaker snob, which sounds terrible, right? Because I've seen some really, really great speakers in my life. And so I'm kind of expecting, this will be great. And this guy was phenomenal. He was so good. And he is the author of a book called The Happiness Equation, I think is what it's called. And I can't remember his name.
I should look it up and tell you.
Yeah. It's so good. And so anyway, this guy comes, I've got it in my Audible. Let me see if I can find it because I should have looked this up before. I didn't plan on mentioning the specifics. Okay. It's right here. Library. We were just listening to it. The Happiness Equation. His name is Neil Parisha. And so it's not anybody I'd ever heard of before. And his story is super unique. The way that he actually came into this work and studying happiness is really unique. And it was interesting because I was sitting at a table with several other people who were LDS. And so he would talk about things and we'd be like, Gospel of Jesus Christ is the answer. You know, I don't know, as he's talking about happiness, we have all these little side comments, things about the gospel that connected so beautifully to what he was teaching. The reason that he got into this had to do with gratitude. He decided to look for reasons to be happy. And I'm going to translate that like to the idea of looking for reasons or things to be grateful for. And he started this blog and it was intended to be one a day for 1,000 days, things that make him happy or things that he's grateful for. And it just really, it caught on. And people started to follow this and, you know, next thing he knows, he's got like millions of people. One of his posts specifically about like, dangerous playground equipment that we all love and remember when we would go down the slide and our bum would get burnt on the slide and all that. And you know, so that post went viral and that's part of what got him started in this work. So I thought, oh, it's so interesting that gratitude or appreciating, you know, things that you have to be happy for got him into this work that he's been really successful at since. And he had all kinds of cool statistics around the correlation between happiness and success. And so I want to tie this, I'll kind of begin with the end in mind a little bit. I want to connect this to how we are happy with a lesson that we've taught, happy with an experience that we've had, how we define success. We've talked a little bit about what constitutes a successful lesson, right? We've kind of gone into that. How do you know that you've been successful in some of those things? I'm going to take it a step further, and I want to talk about success and happiness for just a minute. So how would you, Kevin Jones, define success? And it doesn't have to just be as a teacher. I want to make it more generic first.
Maybe we have a goal and we've reached the goal, or we have taken steps toward the goal. Sometimes that's just success. It could be overcoming something.
So accomplishing something, overcoming something, right?
Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
I don't know. I don't have very many successes in my life, so.
That's just false.
We all like, have, I mean, right?
But I think that sometimes one of the things about success is that, like, I wouldn't necessarily label myself as a successful person, but I've had victories. Do you know what I mean? It's just, this idea of success feels a little bit elusive. And I think that people define it a little bit differently. Like oftentimes as a mother, I do not feel successful. I feel the opposite of successful. I feel defeated a lot.
Sure.
Right? And so I think that there are areas of our life where we might feel naturally more successful than other areas of our life. So how does success make you feel? Like when you have that goal and you reach it, or you've taken steps towards the goal, or you've overcome some obstacle. Those were some of the definitions that you gave. How does that make you feel?
Depends on the goal, the success itself. For example, one success, pickleball, if I get to a certain level and I'm cranking it out, okay, that's success. That I just love that. That's great. Another success is to stop a bad habit. And that, you know, that may just be, whew, okay, I overcame that. That was a lot. That was hard. Right. So that's a totally different feeling.
Right. So it's like relief in one case. And in another case, it's like, yeah. I mean, how do you put that into words? Right.
Right.
Like the pickleball success, the pickleball victory. Yeah. I know that feeling.
Yeah.
Okay. So interestingly, really quickly, I was listening to something this morning that, it's so good. I can't remember her name. But she was talking about the idea that you never really reach a point of success because the minute you reach a milestone, you want the next milestone.
So like that's what I was going to say as well, is that is pretty much along that lines. When we say success, I don't know about you, but I turn to, is someone successful? Just life, right? But then I think, no, I mean, there's a lot of little successes along the way. And, but when you hit success, that success doesn't mean you're successful. You are a successful person. No, that just means that one little piece you've overcome, and there might be a next step, and there might be something grander and bigger than that. So success is really, you know, going for success. I'm not a fan of going after success all the time. It's because I think that word is maybe overused and overhyped.
Yeah. So I mean, candidly, I don't like it that much. Yeah. Because of the fact that it feels a little bit like, when you think about how you would define somebody as being successful, you think about popularity, you think about, you know, prestige, you think about wealth, you think about, you kind of associate it with maybe some of those things that are a little bit negative. Right. But what I love what you're doing, you're taking it and saying that you can have incremental successes. And so we're not necessarily saying I'm a successful person. What we're saying is that when you have those victories, those successes, this is how you feel, right?
And on a tangent, but same thing, it's the same with failure.
Yeah, totally.
Right? It's not that you're a failure. It's that you failed in that one thing, but maybe you learn from it and maybe it might turn out actually to be a success. Or
exactly.
You know, there's so many different types of failure, but
But in the gospel of Jesus Christ, we would define growth as success. But what does growth require?
Sacrifice, action.
Sacrifice, difficulty, overcoming, you know, right?
Right.
Stretching, sometimes pain. You know? And so I think that we can kind of wrap all of that up together. So one of the things that this guy talked about is the idea that we have in our minds, this equation that says that success makes us happy. Right. And so let's go back just a little bit. What precedes success in almost every case with the pickleball thing, with overcoming something? What has to precede success?
I would say uncomfortable action, possibly.
Okay. Could we call it work?
Yeah.
Right?
You don't fall into success.
You've got to work, make effort. What did you say? Mm-hmm.
You don't fall into success.
No.
Right?
No. I mean, some people fall into money or wealth, but
that's
different. Success.
Yep.
Totally different, right? We have to be very careful. I would say that it it's an appropriate connection to make to say that success requires work, requires effort, requires energy. Okay. So will you put up that slide that I have? It has a model, the first one, and it says, okay, we do great work, right? We become successful, and then that helps us to be happy. That's kind of what the world would say.
Sure.
Is the model. So take this into teaching really quickly. Can you overlay how you would apply that to teaching in your mind really quickly?
Overlay. Oh, how I would apply this to teaching? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I thought you meant overlay the next thing. Okay. Yes. So, if we prepare and deliver well, the class is a success that time, or the discussion with our friends or our family. We had a great family home evening, come follow me session. That was successful. And oh, I can be happy about that one.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. And we've talked a lot about that kind of, we crave that feeling at the end of class where we know that we've done a good job. And we've talked a lot about how to prep for that, right?
Yeah.
So the thing that was so kind of inspiring to me was that he actually said this model's wrong. And I thought, oh, is this model wrong for teaching? So this is how he thinks it should go. Go ahead and put up the next one. So he says that happiness is, it actually comes first. And that the fruit of happiness, I almost feel like we could replace the word happy with like grateful, gratitude, appreciation, you know, something else. It doesn't have to be the word happy. So don't get hung up on that word. But that attitude, that feeling of happiness causes us, leads us, inspires us to do great work, and that we will find success in that. And here's part of why he says it this way. What percentage of happiness do you think is circumstantial? Like, what percentage of your happiness is based on what's going on around you? What would your guess be?
Okay, realistically, or what it should be? I think
realistic. I mean, what is it? Like, what is, because I don't know if there's a difference, and I'll explain in just a second.
Yeah. So I would say that, you know, percentage wise, I would say that, you know, I'd have to really think and take a look at that, because the more I think about it, the more, you know, I'll have issues come up, but that doesn't destroy my happiness. Happiness is almost independent of that.
Todd this morning actually made a comment about you, Kevin. And it was so cute. He woke up really grumpy. My husband was very grumpy this morning.
Grumpy man.
And he says, man, I wish I could be more like Kevin Jones. He said, Kevin has so much going on right now and he's really stressed. And yet he is so happy. He played pickleball with you last night. Mm-hmm. And he's like, Kevin just is always happy. And so how much of that, I mean, your life isn't a peachy walk all the time, right?
Right, right.
But you're happy? What? Okay, so
okay.
What do you think? Like, give me a percentage. Give me a guess. You're exceptionally good at this, I would say.
I don't know about that. But I will say maybe I'm going to go with 10% of the circumstances make up my happiness. And I wouldn't say even make it up. I would say influence it.
Okay.
Right. I think just, influence, you know, is a more better word.
A more better word.
A more better word.
That is the exact number that he gave. He said, really, truly, it is 10% circumstantial. And we give a lot, but think about what your comment was at the very beginning, what it should be or what it is. Think about how much power we give to circumstances sometimes.
Right, right.
And how much we allow them to control our happiness. But it isn't necessarily the circumstances that are making us happy or unhappy. What is it?
It's our reaction.
Like when we're giving that, it's your reaction too.
Yeah.
And your perception of mm-hmm. those circumstances, right? It's how you mm-hmm. view those circumstances. And so when you look at this model and you think that only 10% of it is circumstantial, then think about how you have to work on your attitude and how you view things and what a massive impact that has the potential to make in this model for success, right? That if you mm-hmm. feel happy, you choose faith, you choose belief, you choose hope, you choose all these different things. Those are attitudes. I mean, this goes back to the Viktor Frankl thing where he talks about, you sure. know, all of the human freedoms can be taken from a person except his ability to choose his attitude in any given set of circumstances.
Right.
And that's in large part what he's talking about, that we allow ourselves to be robbed of joy and happiness and feelings of success and accomplishment because of our own attitude about it.
So this takes me back to Lehi and Elder Bednar talking about acting and being acted upon.
Right.
Are we allowing right. our circumstances to act upon us to determine the outcome of our state of being, or are we acting right. and being happy? And that goes to, and that has an effect on, like you have here, the work, the great work yes. that you go and do.
Exactly. Exactly. And so now, as you think about this in terms of our teaching, do you ever have a bad attitude going into a class?
Maybe not the greatest attitude sometimes going in. I don't know that I have a bad attitude, but maybe not the best attitude sometimes.
So I've that had happens. A bad attitude before going into class.
Oh yeah.
I have. I've been
as you're teaching it.
Uh-huh. I've shown up grumpy.
Sure.
Like, and just kind of been like, well, okay. So if I'm being super honest, let's go straight to honest. Sometimes there's a difficult person in that class that sure. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to tackle this and this person's going to get offended right. And I gotta respond to other comments. Like I remember during one institute class that I was teaching in particular, I'd had a girl, I think I may have shared this before, get really offended and aggressive with me about this thing that she was offended by. And I mean, totally, I felt absolutely terrible afterwards. I'd made a comment that she'd misinterpreted. And anyway, I mean, I say she misinterpreted, I probably made the comment badly. Regardless, she mm-hmm. really lit into me and I felt terrible. And so every time I would go into that class, I would worry that she was going to be there.
Oh yeah.
Which sounds terrible, right? And so I've sometimes gone into it with a bad attitude, or I thought this is kind of a dumb lesson.
Yeah, I thought that too.
Like I don't have a great lesson.
Is anything going to come come great out of this? I don't know. I think it's just, I'm spending an hour. That's about all I'm doing.
It's going to be mediocre. It's not going to be. And I've had people. So now, I mean, really, truly, you and I love teaching. And so this probably isn't us, but I have frequently, I mean, I am embarrassed by how frequently I have heard this. And I actually mentioned this in reference to people giving a talk, because I've heard it over the pulpit before, where people say something like, you know, I didn't really have time to prepare. This was a crazy week mm-hmm. for me. So, you know, I'm going to need a lot of participation. And then I'm like, wow, what is their attitude about, you know, this lesson coming in? So I started to think about, or do you ever find yourself making excuses, maybe mm-hmm. even out loud to people about why this class isn't necessarily to be great or
right.
So there is an issue with attitude coming into class. Now, I want to kind of take this little model here. And the point of this model is this: we can choose success. We can choose our attitude going into class. And we sometimes have to work on that, right? Sometimes we have to work on our attitude going into class. Now, I'm extrapolating a lesson from this just a little bit that might not feel super natural. in part because this next thing that I want to do, this exercise, was so profound to me personally. And I feel like it applies to every area of my life, including teaching. And so rather than trying to like make it fit a teaching model for a minute, I just want to discuss it. And then we can make some of the connections to teaching at the end. Is that fair?
That's great.
Okay. So this just feels like something that every single one of us needs to learn and every single one of us will probably struggle with. Okay. So when we think about what inhibits us or stops us from feeling happy, from having a good attitude, from reaching this feeling or this, you know, success, so to speak, it's usually us, right? It usually has to do with kind of how we're viewing things. So will you go to the next model really quickly? So this is one of the models that Neil describes in his book. And I was so intrigued by these two axes. So you've got this opinion of self. So if you're listening to this, not watching it, let me just describe it because I think it's really easy to visualize. Okay. So you've got these two axes, and on the vertical axis, it says opinion of self with an arrow pointing up. Okay. And on the other, on the horizontal, it says opinion of others with an arrow pointing to the right.
Okay.
And so the idea is that you can have a low opinion of yourself or a high opinion of yourself, and you can have a low opinion of others or a high opinion of others.
So this is for example, this is my opinion. It's not others' opinion of me. It's my opinion of others, my opinion of myself. Okay.
100%. Yes, gotcha. Exactly. So now what I want us to do is a little exercise, and I don't have this on the slide because we're going to come up with it together, a little exercise to figure out what would belong in each box. So what we've created, we've got these two axes, and then we've created these four quadrants. So it's basically a four quadrant model, and you've got, you know, low to high opinion of self on the vertical and low to high opinion of others on the horizontal. Okay. So Kevin, if you have a high opinion of yourself and a low opinion of others, okay, so that's that top, okay, top
left
box. What would you call that? A high opinion of yourself and a low opinion of others.
Entitled and narcissist.
Okay. Entitled. Okay. Narcissistic. What else?
Not aware.
Okay. Out of touch.
Self-centered.
Not aware. Okay. So self-centered. Okay. Like I want to get to some, because I don't think that most of us would think that we're entitled and, you know, narcissistic. We wouldn't necessarily self-label, but we would say, ooh, I can be a little bit self-centered sometimes.
Yeah. You know, exactly.
Pride. Prideful, right? Arrogance.
That's good.
Okay. Yep. Now let's go to the opposite. If we have a high opinion of others and a low opinion of ourselves. So that's the bottom right quadrant. High opinion of others, low opinion of ourselves.
Timid.
Okay.
Maybe. Not self-assured.
What is that word?
Yeah, what is not that word? Self-assured. Exactly.
Insecure.
Good. Insecure.
Okay. Any others you can think of?
Unfair. And this could go in the other one as well, right? It's unfair. Yeah. In this one, it's unfair to ourselves, and the others, it's unfair to others.
I'm going to call that imbalanced. Is that a good word for it?
That's great.
What about in the square? What if we also said like self-deprecating?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
That would be part of it.
Excellent. Okay. So now What about the bottom left, which is a low opinion of others and a low opinion of ourselves?
A hole I have to climb out of.
Hopeless?
Yeah, that's kind of how I see that.
Yeah. Likely depressed.
Depression. I would say, yeah. I mean, I don't think that someone who is depressed is necessarily in there, but I think people in there would be depressed. So,
yes.
You know, good, one way, but not the other.
Qualification there. I like that you delineated that. Yeah. So that being in that place, though, where you kind of feel bad about yourself and you're highly critical of other people and kind of ripping on them, right? That is not a fun way to live.
Nope. I would almost label that as myopic as well.
Yeah. Good. I think all three of those you're labeling with this kind of imbalanced and myopic kind of view of things, right? Okay. So now let's go to that fourth square, which is the upper right quadrant, where you have a high opinion of yourself and a high opinion of others. What would you call that?
Well, if we took the opposite of myopic, we might say farsighted. We see.
Okay, so.
Into the future more. I revalue perspective rather than imbalance. I was about to say care less.
Okay. Meaning you care less about what other people think.
That could be a part of it. That could be a part of it. But, and it has to go with perspective at the same time. I would say someone who has a high opinion of himself and a high opinion of others doesn't take what they have in front of them and like fixate on that and care as much about that. They're like, yeah, that's just one piece of life. And that's not going to determine how I feel about, you know, if you have someone in your life who is difficult, or I mean, I guess this is opinion of others, and we're doing that generically as a group of people of others as well, right?
Yeah, well, but it could be your opinion of a specific person even.
Okay.
So you could individualize it or you could collectivize it, if that's okay. A word. Is that a word?
So if we collectivize it, let's use the collectivizing model here. If we collectivize it, then we can see that the people as a group, they may be in one state, but they have potential to be in another. And so I don't care as much about what's happening now because I know in the future it'll get better. And same thing with myself. I'm not great at this thing at pickleball, but you know what? That doesn't mean that it makes myself worth less. I have potential. I have more potential. So I care less about the things immediately and I look more towards the things of the future. And that is a long-winded to say.
Yes, I was going to say, I hear you saying with a lot of words, a couple things that we could say with a couple of words.
Please do.
Hopeful.
Okay.
Okay. Accepting.
Mm-hmm.
Content.
Yep.
Are those all good words?
Those are all great words.
Okay. And I heard you say, describe something I would say that is, in my opinion, the best summary word of that box. And it's competence.
Good.
Okay.
I like that.
So let me just push a little bit though. Is that square prideful?
Is it prideful? On the outset, I would say no, but could it be? I think there could be some prideful elements of it because, and I say that because we are being really generic right now, right?
Yeah,
we're taking this kind of as a whole lump. I mean, we only have four quadrants. We're thinking of others as a whole group rather than a particular person, right? And so
no, not necessarily. We're applying it well, to both. We're applying
okay,
it.
Okay, so if we got down to particular things and particular people, that could be prideful, I think, but I think generally it wouldn't be.
So let me actually tell you what I think, and I'm going to say no, it's not pride because I don't know where I read this. I want to chat GPT it and see if I can figure it out. But pride requires a comparison. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. I this was kind of a for me when I read this, that pride requires a comparison. And usually what pride is diminishing something to elevate yourself.
Sure.
Right? So when you have a high opinion of others and of yourself, who's getting diminished?
Right.
Neither one.
No one.
Right? And so the pride comes in when you are diminishing or using that comparison to elevate yourself.
Gotcha.
So pride requires a comparison. Fair? Is that fair to say?
That's fair.
Okay. So then would it be fair to say that in that top right quadrant where you have a high opinion of self and a high opinion of others, you're actually humble?
We might make that connection there. Yes.
Okay. So I would say that one of the fruits of confidence is humility, right? That when we feel secure, that we don't feel the need to compare ourselves to other people. We don't feel the need to, you know, like talk ourselves up or any of those things. So if humility and confidence reside in that upper right quadrant, and you find yourself in any of these other quadrants where you're feeling entitled, narcissistic, self-centered in that upper left quadrant, or you're feeling hopeless, depressed, and have a little bit of a myopic perspective of things in the bottom left, or in that bottom right, you're feeling timid, insecure, maybe a little self-deprecating. If you find yourself in any of those other three quadrants, how do you get yourself out? How do you get yourself into that quadrant where you're confident and humble and secure?
I've got the answer.
Tell me, Kevin.
I think that you serve others.
Bam. Okay. So you serve others.
Because that'll take care of both of them.
Right. Because humility, by definition, right, is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking less about yourself. It's looking out. And so charity and, you know, any kind of outward expression of love and looking at other people and serving other people is going to help bring you into that square where your confidence increases. Now, I think about this particularly when we're teaching youth, right? So I'm going to make a couple teaching connections really quickly. When we're teaching youth, they really struggle with this. They struggle oftentimes to have a high opinion of themselves, like they're really hard on themselves. Other times they struggle because they're like almost, like I see this in a lot of people, that they almost talk themselves up so much in their own mind and put others down to make themselves feel better.
Mm-hmm.
We had a little youth fireside and Todd and I were talking about this, and it was interesting because one of the kids brought up and he's like, okay, if I want to be in the upper right-hand quadrant, we were having this conversation. He said, well, would it be okay if I just stop caring what other people think and think just like, dude, that's on you, whatever. And will that help me to be more confident? What do you think the answer to that is?
To stop caring what other people think.
Not to just stop caring what other people think, but to kind of say, and I'm giving it away by wording it this way, but to kind of be like, dude, I don't really give a rip what you think.
Well, like, that's in a way not caring about the person either. So,
yes,
you know,
yes.
There's a line there.
Right. There's a line there. And so he's like, well, that's always been my strategy. Like, I just try and be like, dude, I don't care. You're stupid. You know, kind of, I mean, right, not really right, saying yeah, that.
Exactly.
But, you know, you're dumb anyway. You don't know what you're talking about. Well, that's diminishing other people. That's right. Having a lower opinion of other people, right? So can you see what I'm kind of trying to describe here, that especially when we're teaching youth, we have to watch for signs that they're in one of these other quadrants. And our goal, if our goal is to help them get into that upper right quadrant where they're confident and they're humble, think about the spiritual implications of that. Think about where mm-hmm. Satan wants us to be, in which sure. quadrant he wants us to reside. He wants division. And so he's like planting comparisons. He wants us to latch onto those comparisons. If you think about this culture that we live in right now, where people are like, you do you, you know, in large part, you doing you is kind of being like, disregard other people. And that is having a lower opinion of others. So can you kind of see some of the power in this model?
Right. Sure.
It's kind of cool, huh?
Yeah.
So, okay. So I feel like I've kind of described this, and let me just tell you why I think it's so powerful. And then I want to make the connection to teaching.
Okay.
So are you processing, or are you like, does it seem clear?
Processing. To you? Yep. Processing. Processing. Go for it. Okay. Keep going. Okay. Yeah.
So just to stop me though, if I am like getting too talky.
Okay.
Because I'm kind of excited about this. Okay. So as I started to think about this, I realized, and this is me kind of confessing some of, I think a lot of women probably will relate to what I'm saying right now. But as women, we very often naturally, easily compare ourselves to each other. You know, she's a better mother than I am. She's, you know, doing such an incredible job with her kids. Sometimes it has to do with physical appearance. Oftentimes it has to do with our weight and things like that. Like I have affectionately referred to myself as the Duff in some of my friendships, because I have really attractive friends. And then I'm the Duff stands for like dumb, ugly, fat friend. And it's
what?
A terrible thing.
What?
It's terrible.
Julie, terrible. Get that out of your head.
But like, do you know what I mean? Like,
no, I don't. No, I don't get that.
Well, you don't. But I promise
I get the concept.
Right now,
yes, yes.
They get this. They get this. That sometimes we see ourselves by comparison as being
yes,
the Duff in
right.
that friendship. Okay, take it to the pickleball court, Kevin. Actually, you don't feel insecure in pickleball because you freaking kick trash. I feel insecure in pickleball, so I'll take it to there again.
Okay.
I get into my head when I'm playing pickleball. And I think that everybody is amazing at pickleball because I usually play with people that are better than me because that's what I want to do so I can get better. But then in my mind, I diminish myself. And as I diminish myself, I play worse.
Sure.
Like,
I get it.
Can you see any places in your life now that I've confessed some horrible thoughts in my own mind where this might be applicable?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there, for example, in being a father, am I being the father that I need to be or that I can be? And I look out and I see fathers who are better than I am. And like, why can't I be like that? But I can't. And I don't even know what that means or how to do that or how to, you know, sometimes it's, how do I even care about that? I don't care about
right.
that. And
right.
how do I make that a part of my personality when I just, that's not me. And, but that's obviously a better way to do it, but I don't even know. So yeah, I get it.
Well, so here's another one that I think men might relate to. I'm being a little bit stereotypical just because I'm trying to illustrate it from different perspectives. Like think about, Todd has said this to me. He said a lot of men attach their worth to their ability to provide, right?
Right.
And so think sometimes about how you feel when you have worked so hard and then somebody that you know makes way more money than you and has all of these things that they're able to provide their kids with. And so I think that they're, you know, I mean,
yes,
we do this as women as well. I'm not suggesting that, oh, so-and-so can afford all of this and oh, we can't because wah. Like we all do these comparison things.
Right.
And comparison is hands down the thief of joy. We know that. And you can see when you look at these quadrants that all of those quadrants require some kind of a comparison where you're looking externally either for validation or in a way to diminish yourself, right?
Right.
And the suggestion that we need to be in, you know, more confident doesn't happen because we think more about ourselves. It doesn't happen because we like work harder on ourselves. It happens when we live our covenants, mm-hmm. meaning when we look outside of ourselves, when we look to God and when we look to others. Sure. So taking this to, and it's almost counterintuitive to focus less on yourself to feel better about yourself. I mean, we can say it, it's familiar to us in gospel language, but in reality, in the world and in our habits and in the way that we're reinforced in terms of social mores, that is counterintuitive.
Right.
To focus less on yourself and become a better person.
Gotta work on yourself. You gotta make yourself feel better. You gotta work out. You gotta go to that happiness place for you. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so now, like I was thinking about this in terms of teaching. Have you ever compared yourself to another teacher and felt like, I am not qualified for this?
Oh yeah, of course.
Right? Like I remember being called for the calling that I had a while ago where I was teaching that institute class, and the mm-hmm. person who taught before me, she was so educated. She was so well-read. She was so articulate. She was so talented. Like she had the most beautiful voice. She was entertaining. She was humorous. She was candid. All of these things. And yeah. I was like, what? Like, and I felt so insecure, not because I thought I was a bad teacher, but because I was comparing myself to her.
Sure. Or you get a new calling and you think, I have to follow that.
Yes.
Which is basically what you're thinking, right? I mean, how many times have I been there? I mean, they rocked it and now it's me.
Yeah.
You went down a few steps that way. Wow. Good call.
What are we decreasing our expectations, trying to lower the bar just a little bit, bringing it to my
level? We did so well over the last few years. Let's bring in Kevin. Right.
I felt that way before. I totally get that. And so I think that part of what I'm trying to suggest then, actually, no, you make the conclusion. So what if we feel insecure as a teacher? What if we find ourselves making those comparisons? And heaven forbid, what if you think you're the bomb?
I thought about that as well. Better. Right. The opposite side.
You're so much better than so-and-so, right?
That's wrong.
Say it. Say what you were saying.
No, that's exactly it. Of oh, you know what? That they kind of stink as a teacher. If I were them, I would do it this way because it would be so much better done if I could just do this.
Right. Or they called the right person for the job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know? That's good too. Yeah.
I'm going to do so much better than so-and-so. I'm going to bring it. I'm going to bring it every week, you know?
Yep. Boy, right? I've heard all of those. Yeah.
And so how do you get out of that? How do you get into the upper right square? We know, I mean, you are probably listening to this podcast because you want to feel more confident. You want to be the very best you possibly can. And how does this model teach us that we go about that?
So I would say to get out of it. I don't know if this is what you're looking for, but I'm going to say that we look and seek for Heavenly Father's expectations of us and go for that and nothing else and say, what do you want me to do? And he will lead us line by line, precept upon precept to where that is. And we don't have to worry about ourselves. We don't have to worry about anyone else. We just follow him.
Okay. So turn it over, basically. Mm-hmm. Keep mm-hmm. God in the equation. Okay. I love that. Assume you're doing that. Mm. What else can you do? Use this model. Use what we just talked about.
just care less. I mean, forget that. I don't know. I need the words written up there. I need to revisit the words.
Is this hard? Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Oh, I wish I could write them up there.
Yeah, I know. We had a whiteboard right now where we could just write
them. I should have, but I didn't want us to cheat. And I didn't want to assume you would come up with the words that I came up with.
Right. That makes sense.
Does that make sense? And so I was trying to just be very organic. But let me just put four words to it, okay? Top right or top left, arrogant. Okay. Top right, confident. Bottom right, I'm going to put hopeless. Or bottom left, excuse me. And then bottom right, I'm going to put insecure. Okay.
Okay. I'm putting.
So remember.
Whoops.
Remember Sorry. What we said. You can probably just edit those, can't you?
Yep. I can. Okay. Give it to me again.
Okay. So top left, arrogant.
Arrogant. Oh boy. Arrogant.
Yep.
Did I spell that right?
A-R-R-O-G. Do you need help?
A-R-R-O-G-A-N-T. Yeah.
Okay. You got it. Good job. Okay. There put that up there. Good. Next one. Confident. That's in the upper right. No, there you go. Upper. That's, you got that in the right. Yeah. And then
I'm going to change that there. To confident.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good. And then bottom left, hopeless.
Bottom left, hopeless. Okay.
And then bottom right, insecure.
Insecure. Got it.
Okay. Now you've got those up there. I'm so sorry. I really didn't want to put them in there because I was worried we'd come up with something different.
Yep. Makes sense.
But we did come up with those. I feel like those were kind of some of the summary ones. Okay. So now take it again. And I want you to think about yourself as a teacher. And I want you to think if you are cocky, if you think you're a great teacher and in some way better than fill in the blank, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you just really feel like crud about this, you kind of feel hopeless, maybe a little bit depressed about your callings. You dread Sundays. Or go to the insecure one where you think that everybody else could do this better than you. Like everybody else would be a better teacher. And yet they called you and you're like, this, oh my gosh, how do I even do this? So if you look at this model, remember what you said the solution was before. How do you get out of those other three squares? What did you say?
I said serve.
Okay. So translate that to teaching. How do you get out of those other three squares?
Generically, I would say, remember that it's not about me. And I actually don't have anything to do with this. If I'm in the insecure spot, say, I don't matter in this, it's them. And when I focus on them, that takes me out of being insecure.
Them. Who's them?
Whomever I am teaching.
Right. Okay. So I think you nailed it with that. That's my opinion. I feel like we often make it so much about ourselves, our own inadequacies, our own skills with a Z because we're awesome, our own whatever, our own frustrations, our own whatever. The idea is that if we can get out of that space and focus more on building and lifting and seeing the best in others. Like I'm not just talking about focusing on others' needs. I'm actually talking about focusing on your opinion of them as well. Mm-hmm. Like seeing them differently.
Yeah.
And we could use the cliche and say, see them as God sees them. But that feels a little cliche to me. I really like this is a conscious kind of thing that we do where we enter a space with love. Like we are praying not that we'll be a better teacher, but we're praying that we'll be able to see people more clearly. We're praying not that the lesson's going to go well because that's kind of about us having our success. We're praying that they will be able to receive what they want because they're smart, they're capable. They, do you see what I'm saying? Like, right. you focus on, like, I have gone into a class. I was teaching this class of like 16 to 18 or no 17 and 18 year olds once. And I tell you every week, I'm like, they're not going to freaking talk. I'm like, this is so,
we've all been there. Yeah.
So my opinion of them is what? It's diminished.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And so I'm like, I got to bring the show. So what's right. that? That's me in the cocky category, thinking that I am going to make the lesson because they're not, because they're dumb.
And it's, I'm gonna all be on awesome. You.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, so some of the, I'm making a little bit more dramatic than it actually has to be just to illustrate the point. But I do think that every single one of us can relate to this. And we don't really think that when we're like, oh my gosh, this class is so hard. Well, guess what we're doing? Diminishing our opinion of them.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we need to spend our energy? Increasing our opinion of them so that we can become more confident. So ironic that that would be the thing that would help make us more confident.
Yeah, I like that. Because I think of times, like, for example, when I've taught the youth and I've just struggled with one or two right. of them, right? And I wish that, you know, when they don't make it to class, I'm like, phew.
Right.
This is going to be better, right? And then yeah. when I focus on them, and for example, I might go to their house and sit down and talk to them, get to know them more, those kind of things, then my view of the situation and my view of them changes for the better.
Totally.
Because I get them on a more full level than I would if I'm just sitting there making side comments, like those two guys in the Muppets up in the, you know, they're just, they're just making jokes. Right. And they're just ripping yeah. on everybody. And that's kind of how I feel sometimes, but you got to get down on stage with them and have experiences with them and, get out of myself and what I think. And so you're right. I think that is a great way to get out of really all of those, to get out of that right. arrogant. But okay, so here's this though. I think secure, recognize. Hopeless, recognize. Arrogant, do we really recognize that as much?
I know, okay. So here's a clue to us, I think. And remind me to come back and make a comment on the comment you just made. But okay. here's a clue to us. If we find any comparison, then we are
there. You go.
There.
That's great.
Right? So that's pride by definition right there. So if we find ourselves making any comparisons, red flag, we're there.
That's great. I like that a lot. So that's just kind of the litmus test there.
Right. Right. And you gotta be honest with yourself about that. That's a really tough one, I think. It's a really tough one to spot. Like, I think it's easier for us to spot when we're being hard on ourselves.
Right.
It's not as easy for us to spot when we're actually prideful.
Right.
I love what you just described about getting to know this person. Like, you're almost relieved when they don't come to class, and then, you know, you get out, you get to know them a little bit differently. You do something different. Think about how you've taken time, you've gone and you visited them at their house. And the result of that is, what are you wanting the next Sunday? Oh, you're like, please come, please come, please come. Like, I really, really want you to be there.
Yeah.
It's the opposite, yep. right?
Yep.
And I remember like feeling that way about people where I just, I want them to be there so badly. And it's not because you want them to get something out of your lesson. It's because you want them. They matter to you.
Yes.
That's so different.
So that right there reminds me of a quote from Ender's Game.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that book or that movie?
I mean, Ender's yes, Game? Familiar, but like, it's been years.
Okay. In there, and I just looked it up real quickly. Ender, who's the main character, tells his sister. He talks about his views on love and hate. And he says, in the moment when I truly understand my enemy, understand him well enough to defeat him, then in that very moment, I also love him.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Isn't that amazing? That's so good. That's so good. Okay, so that goes along with this other quote that I have. Hold on. I think it was Todd sent it to me. Let me see if I can pull it up really fast. Oh, okay. Okay. So it talks about, and this connects it back to happiness, right? It's from a New York Times article, I think. It says, happiness does not always require success, prosperity, or attainment. It is often the joy of hopeful struggle, consecration of purpose, and energy to some good end. Real happiness never has its roots in selfishness. It blossoms in love of some kind.
That's good. Because you don't have to, I mean, how many times have we tried for something, we weren't successful in it, but we were happy about it.
Right. Well, and so now take this back to the model that we talked about, right? When we look at that other model where, and you don't have to pull it up because I think that I want to keep referencing this for just two more seconds.
Okay.
It's the idea that you start with that you start with happiness. So yeah. I would say that this idea of being more confident and investing in that space, the fruit of that is happiness. The fruit, like this is, we're talking about a mindset here. Mm-hmm. We're talking about an attitude. We're talking about the way we're thinking of and perceiving things. And so that will inspire us, infuse in us a desire to work hard, to prepare these amazing lessons. We'll be motivated more by love. We'll have more of a sense of purpose.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's when you feel good about it. Don't call it success, call it whatever, but that's when you feel good about what you've done. You have peace.
I don't have it right in front of me, but teaching in the Savior's Way says something like that. It says something along the lines of, oftentimes it's not what you teach, but how much you love the people you teach.
Yes.
And again, that's not exactly it, but that's kind of the sentiment of what they're trying to say.
Yep. That's what they will feel from you. And that will make the lesson successful, right?
Yeah.
That's what will inspire you to do the hard work, to prepare a great lesson, to make it meaningful because you love them.
Yeah.
Like that's what it should be motivated by. Anyway,
so go ahead. So really, because one of the reasons we do this podcast is to help teachers become more confident.
Right.
Because there's a lack of that. Right. And I think this is an incredible model just to think through. I mean, I think someone could take this really and really dive into it with themselves and say, okay, what quadrant am I in? What do I need to do to get out of this? I mean, the answer is always the same to get out of any of those, to get up to the confident level. It's pretty much the same thing with subtleties in there. But I think this is a great, I think a lot of people will get a lot out of this. I like this a lot.
Yeah. It was so profound to me. And I think that most of us are probably going to find ourselves in either the prideful one, the arrogant prideful one, or the insecure one. Mm-hmm. I think that those are the two quadrants that a lot of people listening will potentially find themselves in. And I love what you just said, that the answer is, it's going to be the same, but it's not what you think it's going to be, right? It's not prepare harder. It's not. It's look, raise your opinion of others, focus on others, love others, right?
Yeah. And then, take that, continue that on. You love others. They feel loved and they respond with that as well. And if you're having a difficult someone in class, that just totally turns the class around, or can turn the class around, I'll say.
Yeah, it has the potential to. And I think, I mean, a lot of what we, you know, talk about here on the podcast are hypotheticals. And to be clear, we recognize that all of this takes time.
Yes.
You know, changing your attitude, changing your mindset, growing in love, you know, to, or excuse me, not growing, it sounded like a romantic thing, but growing to love someone more and better. All of those things take, they take a lot of time.
Yeah.
And especially with people who kind of are bristly and kind of, you know, have a little bit of an edge to them and resist some of that, because you will have that, especially yeah. when you're teaching the youth. And the reason that you have that has to do with them being in one of those other three quadrants as well. I think that part of what this also gives us is perspective about where other people lie, so that we don't take things as personally.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you look at other people and you see them behaving in a way that shows that they're insecure, you can have a little bit more compassion versus taking it personally.
Right.
Right. Or they're being arrogant and you're like, wait a minute, you know, part of this is that, I mean, you just kind of have to not, again, take it personally.
Right.
I say that and then I'm like, wait, they have a low opinion of other people. Oh, that is personal. That's not what I meant. But but really, truly, you can kind of look at this model and you can see that people are struggling with different areas. And if they were confident, that arrogance and confidence can get mixed up when you're looking at it from the outside.
Yep, sure can.
Right?
Yeah, they have the same, a lot of time they have the same face. But
they have internal, the same face.
The internal struggles are very, very different there.
Yeah. Well, and you'll see that the face may be the same, but some of the behaviors are different. Like a person who is a little bit more arrogant and actually, you know, not confident will be more defensive, will think that they're right, will protect their opinions, because anything that could rattle their sense of self, oh, heaven forbid, you're right and I'm wrong, throws them into the other category. So you have just a little bit of ability, I think, to have compassion for other people who are struggling with one of those other quadrants.
Yeah, that's good. Of course. Very good. Anything else you want to add to that, Julie, before we end?
No, that is it. It was really profound to me personally in a lot of areas of my life. And as I'm teaching my children in particular, I think that this is like my son's getting ready to go to college. And we were talking about this with that youth group the other day, like I was saying, and it was interesting to hear him walk through this model and kind of go, whoa, wait a minute. I really do want to be a confident guy. And sometimes we even mistake in ourselves confidence. Like we are actually in the prideful category.
Right.
And so looking for the best in other people is really the antidote to some of that. And figuring out how to see and look and take a genuine interest in other people, that will help you to feel more confident. And you think sometimes it's talking about yourself is going to do the trick. Talking about yourself is going to get you more friends. You know, impressing people. No. The opposite. Taking an interest in them.
Yes.
That's how you make friends.
I like it. So here is my invitation to everyone. If you know of someone who is struggling in their confidence in teaching, send them this episode. Say, all right, here's how to become confident. Here's where you can focus. Try this. And send it on to them and help them. Because again, one of the major purposes of this podcast is to help gospel teachers become more confident in their teaching. So let's help each other. Thank you, Julie. This is great. I appreciate
it.
And thanks for listening, everyone, and watching. And like, share, subscribe, and all that good stuff. And we'll see you next time. Bye.